From the Marquee Media Studio inside Mark Tank, it's the Mark Haney Show.
Yes, this is the Mark Haney Show. Super excited about today's show. It's going to be fun, but it is also going to be educational. We're going to be talking about marketing. It's all about building the backyard advantage, the most connected community in the world for local entrepreneurs, and it's based around this culture of love, right? Helping one another. And at the heart of the advantage really is these people that have given of themselves to help the other people in our world, in our little community. And Jenna Sparza is one. She is part of the advantage, and she is also the owner of the Jen Advantage, which is kind of coincidental. Welcome to the show, Jen.
Thank you so much.
So the Jen Advantage, I thought I was the guy creating the advantages around here. What's the Jen Advantage?
I know, we're both just on the same page there. So the Jen Advantage, I have a marketing agency that helps nonprofits and small businesses develop their marketing strategies and implement them. But I'd say the advantage is just I have such a heart for what they do, because most of them are such hard workers, are passionate about what they do, and they just need help telling their story. And so I really like to be able to come alongside them, give them the personal attention that they need. It's not just, you know, here's a quick fix, here's some marketing gimmicks. It's really about getting to know them and what their hopes and dreams and goals are, and helping them get to that stage of what they're hoping for.
So the advantage itself really is your ability to get to know them. It's you, of course, your charisma and all the other great imagination. But you said get to know what their hopes and dreams are. What kinds of things do small businesses, what do you typically hear when you hear that? I just want to survive, or is it I want to be a billionaire?
Sometimes it's a little bit of both. Okay. And sometimes they just don't know. I think the knee-jerk reaction is to say, I just want to make more money, because at the end of the day, they have bills to pay or they have employees to pay. And so I like to really be able to get into more of the meat of it, of like, why did you start this business and why are you passionate about what you do or the people you're serving? Like, why does that matter to you? And be able to build upon that, because once I have like the basis of who they are and what they got into this for, we can build on like, where is this at? Where can we actually take this?
Okay, so look, could I ask you to just walk me through this a little bit?
Yeah.
So how about I'll pretend that I'm the, I'll be the client, and so I'm the person that got into this business, and then help me develop my marketing
approach. Well, you have a nonprofit, right?
I do. We actually have two nonprofits. We have the Growth Factory has a nonprofit arm where we help entrepreneurs and help get people inspired and educated about entrepreneurship. And then we also help veterans. And you've been at, I know, at least one of our events where we are helping veterans transition out of the military.
So say if we talked about that as your nonprofit. So I've helped both nonprofits and small businesses. So I would ask you, like, why did you start this nonprofit? What was the need?
I wanted to help veterans. My son was in the Marine Corps. He ended up getting wounded in action. And I felt that I needed to do something to help in own way, because I wasn't man enough to go out and fight. But I needed to do something. So my wife and I started the charitable organization to help other veterans besides our son.
And how is it different from other organizations out there?
I think our big differentiation is a community that we built. We have thousands of people in our veteran community, and we help them while they're still in the military. As they get out, they transition out, and really we're the largest in the country. So one of the things that's really different about ours is it's online. So we have military people from all over the world in our program, and they get this individualized support in helping them be guided through their decision-making process and the training process associated, you know, with landing on the right foot on the other side. Because if they don't, I think we've all heard about people that are kind of get stuck, and you know, our military people don't deserve that. They're hardworking, and they can be the best, most valuable people in your life or on your team, and to see them getting stuck is really a crying shame.
So what's your biggest accomplishment with that organization?
I think what I love about it is the team that my son has built. My son is the CEO, and so he has built this really strong team of veterans that have all have this heart for helping their brothers and sisters. And so for me, I love seeing the fact that they're doing what they want to do. So that's the stuff I get to see close to home.
And what has been the biggest challenge about having a nonprofit? And
this mostly getting out of our own way. That's been difficult. But I think really it's kind of like there's been a lot of testing. We tried a co-working space, ran into COVID that killed a lot of co-working spaces. And so we pivoted from there and we did training. And it really wasn't until we developed this community that we discovered sort of who we were. So really we discovered that people helping each other is a unique value proposition. And so that's really a differentiator for us.
And if there was no barriers, all the money in the world, all the time in the world, all the talent in the world, what would you guys want to go and do with this program?
We would open up 50 locations around the country whereby people, when they get out, have a place to go and maybe with a gym set up in it and really build a broader networked community geographically, and together their strength in that community, their strength in those numbers, and a lot of positivity that can come out of a real effort that where veterans helping veterans occurs.
So normally, like, and if I were going to do a full evaluation on your organization and do this, like the conversation we would have would be a full hour. And I've got some, those are some of the specific questions I asked, but those are
some
of them. On the
spot, it was very awkward.
No, but like the best part about it.
Asked for it, didn't I?
You did.
Sorry.
Is, you know, it's very easy to say like, oh, I do marketing. And you're like, big deal. But when I tell you about my background in nonprofits and why I love small businesses and I give you more meat, you're like, okay, I get this. Tell me more. And so, you know, you start out by telling me what you do and what it's all about. And then when I start asking questions and helping you dream about it a little bit more, the excitement level rises. And I'm like, okay, like we can work with this. Like, let's see, what are you doing? What are your strengths? What are your weaknesses? What are the, you know, what goals can we set to actually move the needle? And then specifically come up with those strategies that will help move the needle.
Well, I was thinking about marketing is, you know, it's part art, part science. I don't know if there's another part to it, but is there something else to it? Is it more art, more science, or is it some combination?
No, it's definitely a combination. It's definitely a combination because, you know, I hear a lot of people, they'll say like with social media, oh, I'm just going to have my teenager do it for me. And that's great because a teenager is going to make better TikToks than me any day. But if there's not a strategy, which is like the science behind it, then it's just noise. So it's a little bit about being able to create the things that capture the attention, that pull at your heartstrings, that, you know, convince you to make that, you know, purchase or whatever. But then there's also the science behind it of what those things are.
Yeah, I was thinking about the questions that you were asking me and the questions that you ask your other clients, I suppose. And that taps into our imagination. So I'm wearing my shirt, everything is figure outable. It's one of my mantras around here. A Markism is what we call it. And I have this theory that anything is possible, right? Everything is figure outable if you have enough imagination, if you have enough inspired action, and if you have enough stick-to-itiveness, eventually you'll figure it out. And I think that's what happened with Allegiant. I think that's what's happened with our other company, The Growth Factory. It didn't happen easy. It was very difficult, but it was those conversations about what do we want to be when we grow up and why are we doing this that allowed us to tap into our imagination. And that, to me, I think what I've seen with a lot of startups, right? I run into this in this world of startups, and taking time away from building the product and thinking back about the why, and that taps into your imagination in kind of a cool way. But we don't want to set aside that time a lot of times. So you sort of force that issue, like we're going to force the downtime.
Yes.
You think you're out there supposed to be just banging, and you're really, you need to set aside some time and, you know, look inside.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, I gave this example to a nonprofit recently that she was like, how am I supposed to make the time for this? Like everything you just said in this talk was fantastic, but how am I supposed to make the time? And I realize that's hard, but especially for a nonprofit, this definitely pulls at the heartstrings. This particular one, they serve homeless and then especially people coming out of like a domestic violence situation who find themselves homeless. Mm. And I said, can you imagine if there was a woman and a child out there who you don't reach? because they don't know about you. Like, you're so busy with your head down serving the ones that you do serve that you haven't looked up to go, wow, what else can we do? Are we getting the word out? Are we doing as much as we can? And I'm like, if there's somebody out there who can be served that could easily be reached, but you're not doing it, like, how does that feel? And she's like, oh, I need to make the time.
Yeah. Well, why did you decide to have this focus where you're focusing on nonprofits, small business, startups, people that have lower budgets to pay, right? So they aren't writing the million-dollar checks to Jed and Esparza, I assume. You're working with the people at the very beginning that maybe are even underserved in some way.
Yeah, and I think it just goes back to the type of personalities I'm finding in within those groups. There's especially, you know, nonprofit leaders, they get into something because they've got such a passion for a cause, and yet they don't sign up to know how to do marketing and legal and HR. And same with a small business owner, like someone's, you know, really great at doing hair or being a plumber or an esthetician, but they don't know these other skills necessarily. And so It just kills me to see somebody who's got so much talent and so much potential, and they could serve our community so well, and they just don't know how to bring awareness. So if I can come alongside them to take that worry off their back, kind of, you know, be their teammate to play that role for them and get them back closer to doing what they love, like, we both win.
Yeah. So I was thinking about, because I, you know, building businesses over the years, we try to do it ourselves sometimes. We all play marketer at our own level, and we think we have imagination and we think we know what we're doing. And so a lot of people try to sort of keep it in house. But if you have a really small company, you are busy. If you're a construction guy and you've got 5 employees, you're out there, you know, swinging a hammer probably.
Right.
A lot of us are really caught up in the business, and sometimes marketing, we need to step back out of the business a little bit and look on the business at some level. So thinking about that, when is it time to bring in somebody from the outside? Because at the beginning, we feel like we have no money. I'm trying to get my first customer. So I'm kind of thinking, like, when is it the right time? And what's that progression look like when we start with someone maybe more like you, and then ultimately we're working with somebody, you know, somebody different potentially? I don't know. Walk me through that progression as to how do you choose the right person and what it looks like at the given time for the life cycle of your business.
I think that it would be really great, even just from the very beginning, to bring in somebody to at least consult with you, have another opinion. Like, we get so on our own heads that we know things, especially just like answering the question of who's your customer avatar. We think that, you know, oh, well, they're going to think like us and dress like us and live where we do. And that might not be the case. So just to bring in somebody, even just for a blanket consultant, to
before
say,
you even come up with the name of the business, maybe, huh?
Just to like help the framework of really determining who you're serving and what you're doing. But if you're already in business, and it's too late for that. I think some people are just more inclined. They understand the marketing stuff. But if you really don't, if you are just out there wondering why your phone's not ringing and you're getting frustrated, you need to make the room in your budget, and it needs to be part of your budget to have someone doing marketing.
How often in the course of your work, when you start asking about customer avatar, explain that if you will, but I have this sense that as they begin to discover, you know, look into those questions more deeply, there's sometimes like a pivot that happens, like, oh, that's my actual customer. I hadn't really thought of it that way. So walk me through that if you don't mind.
Yeah, I would say, I mean, I love all of my clients and I think they love me, but I'm sure they probably find me a little annoying too, because I ask a lot of questions, and it's not because I, you know, want to make their idea like ruined. I want to make it better. So let's get to the meat of all these things. And so when I ask them, like, what is your audience? Who's your customer look like? Often they'll say everybody. You know, you own a coffee shop, you're like, I'll serve coffee to anyone who comes in my door. Or I'll change anyone's, you know, HVAC system. But it's that work that you have to put into actually thinking about, like, well, what area are you serving and what does the general demographic look like? And sometimes that makes them go, oh my gosh, I did not even realize, like, I need to be open during these hours instead of these hours, because I serve mostly retired people or whatever it might be.
Okay, well, let me put my HVAC contractor hat on for a second, because this is interesting to me. So I come in and I own a HVAC company, and we do work. I don't actually, but if I did, we would do work. Let's call it Placer County, along with, you know, Citrus Heights and Orangevale. I'll drive 30 minutes to go do an HVAC job. I do mainly repair, but I also put in new systems once in a while. It's a homeowner. It's a geography. What else am I? How do I hone in a little closer to find that avatar?
Yeah. So, I mean, it's a homeowner for one. So that's
homeowner. Yeah.
Because there could be renters. Don't want to talk to them.
Okay.
So it would be a homeowner. And then you would look at the age of the homes, because from that you'd be able to tell, like, am I just going to be doing potential repairs, or are they going to need replacements?
Less like a new construction, right? So it's probably homes that are over 10 years old.
Right. Yeah. Right. So if you were like in a new construction area, you're more, I don't know, maybe trying to get them to sign up for some like filter changing,
exactly.
Whereas if it's an older neighborhood, then you're looking at more like the replacement and things like that. And so, yeah, homeowners, and then you're looking at demographics as far as what people will spend, and that's how you determine what products you carry and what kind of things you're offering. So, if you have a range, right? HVAC system can, I don't know, maybe start at $10,000 and maybe go all the way up to $20,000. And so that's when you start looking at the products you're offering. So yes, you've got all these homeowners in this area. They all need one. How much money do they actually make? Are more of these people married or more of them single? Mm. That will affect what they can afford. And that's how you can kind of help determine what you sell.
Do you ever help them look into, let's pull out your offering a little bit. Let's say the maintenance contract is high margin. Let's say they make great money on my, when I get a maintenance contract, that's almost straight profit. The repairs, they're hit and miss, and they're more project based, and you know, they're a little harder to bank on. But if I could have that high margin stuff coming in every month with the maintenance contract, it's theoretically got a different kind of value than maybe the project business. Help them like analyze the business a little bit?
Absolutely. And looking for other ways of, so for like HVAC, getting in with property management companies who potentially have a lot of homes that they're going to need help with. So looking for other ways of how we can create those streams of income, and like what other, who else in the community can actually help us with building this?
Okay. This is great. So I'm getting a sense as to what you do. Where are you seeing, so you're helping, that's a pretty wide range of clients, right? Mm-hmm. Somebody who's maybe direct to consumer with the coffee shop, somebody who is direct to consumer plus maybe working through more on the commercial side with apartment complexes. Are you finding that there's one avenue or one vehicle of marketing that's, let's say, more effective? You've got direct mail, you've got radio advertising, you've got social media, billboards, all kinds of stuff. How do you help navigate that process?
Probably, and the one thing that really can't make me any money is word of mouth. but that's still gold.
Oh, you try to help them build word of mouth.
Yeah, so I'm saying like,
campaign.
But that's, you know, I could sell you social media and newsletters and websites all day long, and those things all have their place and they definitely serve a purpose, but there is nothing like word of mouth still. If I tell you, you know, if you need an HVAC repair and you're going through Instagram, you're not going to call the guy just because some random ad showed up. So that's, you know, being placed on Instagram is more about just creating those impressions. The more impressions we make, the more times you hear the name, see the name, recognize their brand, the more likely you are to, you know, potentially use them. But if we're sitting here and you say, Jen, do you recommend anyone? And I tell you, that carries so much more weight. Yeah. So all those other things we do, once I tell you that, then maybe you go on their website and you're like, okay, they look legit, or, oh, really? Maybe I won't ask Jen for advice anymore. But all of those things serve a purpose. But if you have bad reviews, if people are leaving you bad reviews, if your customers are talking bad about you, like,
no go.
Yeah.
How important... One of my other theories is that an advantage, like I had mentioned with our Allegiant Vets program, we're number one in the country. And I think because when you become number one in a, even though it's a niche, when you become number one in your niche, which often requires narrowing the niche, that can be a real advantage. It's really an advantage to be the one who's the go-to for that in your neighborhood or your niche. But finding I find that a lot of startups, they don't want to narrow the niche and become number one. Instead, they say, I just want to, I'll sell to everybody, like you had mentioned at the beginning. And often I find people wanting to help people narrow down their offerings so that they can become the default go-to and the number one. And that gets people talking about you when you're number one in whatever, helping veterans get out of the, you know, the military. It's kind of a narrow niche, but it's number one, or I'm the number one coffee shop in, you know, that neighborhood.
Definitely. And it's, I think the more serious people, when people get serious about like their growth and they actually want to like go deeper and be more serious about their industry and the job they're doing, I think that's when they're ready to have that conversation. Mm-hmm. I mean, cause I know even when I started my marketing business, it was kind of like, okay, what do you need? Like, okay, yeah, I guess I do that. I mean, it was, you start out with like letting the customer almost tell you, and then you're like, well, no, wait a second. Like, let's narrow in our focus. This is what we actually do. And so the more serious you are about making an impact and actually like having the most quality product, I think then you're ready for that.
Yeah. And I think when you get back to your why did I start this? Well, I wanted to have success. I wanted to change lives, these kind of things. I want to make a difference. There's nothing like being number one to help make that happen. But I think a lot of times we get so caught up in the business, and maybe there's so many difficulties in building a business that we tend to lose confidence and say, I just want to survive. And we lose sight of the fact that I set out to do this to be great. And we almost forget that this greatness, whatever that is for me or you, it's out of sight and out of mind, and we're only in survival. And our aspirations get killed because of whatever failures that we have. And that's what I see.
Or imposter syndrome. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's a very real thing. And I see that in so many people. And I've sat in chambers of commerce meeting when there's four other people who get up and talk and they do marketing. And it would be very easy for me to be like, man, this market's saturated. You know, bummer. But instead, I know that like there's plenty of business for all of us to go around, and how my message might resonate with you and his message might, resonate with him, whatever. But I need to be confident in what I offer and what I do, and like just stick to that. I can't look at what other people are doing in the sense of playing the comparison game. I think, and that's, you talk a lot about community and helping each other. I have the greatest group of like professional other people in the marketing business that are my, they're my peers and they're my competition. And yet we talk about things and I ask them questions and they come to me. And it's the coolest thing to actually get rid of those barriers of like, oh man, you might steal my client, and just help, what is this, the saying about rising tides, raise all the ships. It's so true. If you'll actually like get over that fear and put that into practice.
How do you create those type of relationships? Cause I totally believe in that collaboration over competition. And I have friends that are in marketing that maybe have a specialty in video, and somebody else has a specialty in, digital media, let's call it. And they actually team up on projects together. I've seen marketing people like work on a client account hand in hand. But how do those kind of relationships manifest themselves?
Well, for me personally, I'm pretty picky about people. I feel like I have a really high level of discernment and I have a lot of integrity. And so I really worry about like my name and what I put out there and whether or not, I'm actually holding to the line of what I say I do. So when I find other people who are like that, then I know that they're going to be, good people to work with. So I might be a little, gun shy or ask all my questions and look at the types of, folks they're working with, the type of work that they do, and make a judgment off of that. But it's happened by just being introduced to people within the community, like whether it's through the Growth Factory or through the Chamber, just making those connections and then just being wise about who you put your name on.
Well, I want to take a minute to thank you for being a part of the Advantage, is what I called it at the beginning. You've helped a number of the people, the startups, and the small businesses that have gone through the various Growth Factory programs. And I know you, I talked to Monique this morning, and she was raving about how impressed she is with you and how much you've helped people within our world. But if you could, if you don't mind, walk me through, is there a case study where you had a person, whether it be in our program or another one, that really transformed their company and you were in the middle of it and maybe even a key?
Just through our year-long cohort we're in right now, it's been the coolest thing to be a part of and to watch, because we've seen all of these businesses come in at different places in their business, whether they're brand new, they're 2 years old, they're 5 years old, they're all doing different things, but then they all have a pain point. Like, they're all looking for some sort of growth, but there's a pain point there. And in July, everyone was just tired. It was, busy summer. We had gone hard over the last few months about just really getting to the bottom of things with finance and marketing and setting goals. And in July, the thing too is that entrepreneurs are people too. So a lot of people just had stuff in life, whether it was good stuff or bad stuff, but you carry that with you as a business owner. You don't get to just show up for work and leave that at home. Like, it's so intertwined. So July felt a little defeated. Like, oh my gosh, what are we doing here?
Was that you and Marcy?
Yeah.
Okay.
So we regrouped and we're like, what does our group need? What do we need? And we brought in a speaker in August who talked just about that, about entrepreneurs are people too, and how do we handle the stresses of life with managing a business and growing. And we had one-on-ones with everybody. We got them back on track about applying for grants and what their goals were, resetting and okay, where are we? Where are we headed? What was the original plan? And now that we've watched people apply for their grants, start implementing them, the Chalet Event Center wanted more business during the day. They have plenty of things during the weekend, but wanted more daytime things. And so we suggested, why don't you get AV equipment? And so get the AV, the slide projector and the screen and all of that. And that's his grant money. And he has just by leaps and bounds booked meetings, booked more events because he has this thing. And so to watch those little changes, and everybody who's applied for a grant, to watch how that's just changed their mindset of testing something new, and wow, they can do this. They don't have to stay status quo. They can change. So all of them have been making these positive shifts, and it's like a proud parent. I'm just sitting back going, oh my gosh, how do I even get to do this for a living and help you? This is amazing.
Oh, that's so cool. I want to get back to your roots in Roseville. We talked about that a little bit. People have told me that, you should do a podcast that's national. My security camera companies that I have one still, and we do business all over the country, and my other businesses have been all over the country. And I've wanted to focus at home because I grew up here. I grew up in Roseville as well, but kind of thinking of Sacramento, broadly speaking, is my home. And I wanted to do something here. Maybe it's to be number one in a market so that I'm going to focus geographically so that I could help as many entrepreneurs here versus spread my efforts out across the country. And that was a decision that was really thought through. And I was challenged on that a lot by people saying that's not a good decision, especially in today's world. You could help people all over the country. And I'm like, nah, I want to go here. You've chosen to do something similar, if I'm not mistaken. You're focused on Sacramento companies. Am I right?
Yeah, I mean, I have one client in Texas, and I've had a couple just throughout randomly in Georgia, Minneapolis, but those are more consulting mm-hmm. things and not a client that I'm actually doing done for you services for. I was born and raised here, third generation. Now that my kids are their fourth generation, it's really special to be able to walk into the grocery store and have somebody know, you're Tommy Tilla's daughter. And I just, there's something really special about just having that tie to your community, because I'm that much more invested in helping it.
So you're helping the growth factory. You're giving of yourself to do this. You're coming to our Allegiant Vets fundraisers. And I know you do a lot of give back to the community. Where does that fit into either building your business? Why do you do all that stuff, I guess, is the question.
Oh, why do I do that? Because it feels right. Because I think it's what I was called to do. I was given a gift to be a helper. I was given a gift to, you know, have patience and to really help people discern what it is that they can do in order to make like their own goals and dreams come true, as hokey as that may sound. But I honestly feel like this is what I'm supposed to be doing. My aunt and I have joked before that like sometimes we feel like we're selfish people because we really get pleasure out of doing good things for others. And it does. It feels good to be able to give back. And, you know, we all have the same amount of hours in the day and it's about how we spend them. And sometimes if you can't be giving of your time, then it's your talent or maybe it's your treasure that just giving that way to a nonprofit. But our community is only as strong as as much as we invest in it. So if I can invest back into other people, support them, then I think it makes my community for me and my kids stronger.
Yeah. People have asked that kind of question of others in the past, and I've felt it myself. It's like one of the most rewarding things to do is to help somebody. I mean, I get more out of it if I do something nice for somebody than the person I did it for. It's like, oh, I feel good about it all day. And, you know, it might not have even been a big deal to them, but it feels good to me. So you wrote these books.
Yes.
I'm bringing them out. There's two books here. I'm holding them up here. Marketing Basics. Looks like I haven't read them yet. I thumbed through them a little bit before the show. For nonprofits, and then Marketing Basics for your small business. Would you mind describing the books and then what led to writing the books? Why write the books and what kind of impact are they making?
Yeah. So once I started my agency, I realized that I was not going to be able to help as many people as I wanted to because I am only one person. And I love writing. Like if you could just lock me in a room all day and let me write, I'd be so happy. So it was, you know, my two loves of being able to help people and write coming together. And I was able to write this book to get it in the hands of more entrepreneurs, more small business owners. And really, I love being able to speak, you know, to audiences. Like being able to educate in bulk is really rewarding to me. I've seen a lot of business owners or nonprofits have like a bad attitude about marketing because they may have gotten taken advantage of or just, you know, sold like, here, spend $10,000 and we'll make you number one on Google, and it didn't do anything for them. So it was really important for me to like provide them a tool that would still like had integrity and would really give them the basics of like, I don't know what I'm doing. Now you do. Like this is, there's no jargon. There's no crazy, you know, get rich quick tactics. There's all just literally the basics. But when I wrote the first book, as I wrote it, I realized I need something for nonprofits because while they are a small business in a sense, and it's, you know, just a tax code, they have different challenges with like the way that they're funded, with the way that they're staffed, and often who's doing their marketing for them. And so I wanted to be able to write something that was tailored more to the nonprofits. So the Marketing Basics for Your Small Business came out in 2022. And then almost exactly 2 years later, just last week or so, and a nonprofit one came out.
So do you sell these? How does somebody get these books?
So they're available on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and Walmart. Anywhere you buy books, you can get the book.
Marketing Basics for Your Small Business, Jenna Sparza. If you're listening, you got to go buy a book. If you're a nonprofit, it's Marketing Basics for Nonprofits by Jenna Sparza. So, if they have these, they don't need to hire you then at that stage, right?
Well, what's funny is when I wrote the first one and one of my clients read it, I was like, did I just put myself out of business? And he's like, oh, heavens no, I don't want to do this. But now I understand why you do what you do and why you tell me why we need to do certain things. And so even if you are like an executive director at a nonprofit and you have someone else doing the marketing, or if you're the business owner but you have somebody else doing the marketing, I still think it's important to have a little understanding of the tactics you're using, where you're spending your money, so that if you do talk to a marketing professional, and there's a chapter on this, like how do you hire somebody, questions to ask them.
Do you ask them?
You say that and I'm like, what does the chapter say? But, you know, really
I'll test you.
I actually had a call with somebody once and he was asking me all these questions and I was like, gosh, why does this sound vaguely familiar? And I'm like, oh my gosh, he's reading from my book.
Oh, that's hilarious.
But questions like, you know, how are you going to get to know my company? Like how much, kind of how, is to know how much effort are you going to put into getting to know me, or are you just going to slap on the same thing you do for everyone? You know, is the work done in-house or is it farmed out? Which it's okay if it's not all in-house, but you want to know that just to know like what the turnaround times are like and what's the quality of this. And how much have you worked with my industry? Like, do you know my industry? Are you an expert in real estate, or are you going to have to learn from scratch? And is this, you know, just to kind of help gauge, like, how good are you at your job? Like, how are you, what are your metrics? How are you going to measure if this worked or not?
Well, this kind of brings me back to what I was thinking at the beginning of the show when I was talking about the progression of a small business. And we feel like when we start, maybe we don't have the money to hire a marketing person that is as an employee. So you have to maybe allocate some amount of money toward, you know, marketing or growing your business. You know, you do. How do you go about making that decision? So I'm not $1 million in revenue yet, but yet I know I need to market. What percentage of my, is it a percentage of sales? Is it percentage of my bank account? How do I decide how much I'm going to spend on marketing?
It's a little different for every industry. It depends on what you're selling. When you're selling, you know, widgets, well, small widgets versus a big widget, your budget changes kind of. I think like the most important thing is making sure you do have any budget for it, because anytime I've gone to a client who doesn't have a line item in their budget for marketing, and they say, I want to send out a mailer, and I'm like, cool, it'll be $2,500. And they're like, what? And then they only get 5 calls and they're like, I spent $2,500. And they're sick to their stomach over it because it wasn't anything planned. So this was like $2,500 they had to find from wherever. If you already know you're going to spend $2,000 a month on marketing, then you're just pulling out of an account, writing a check and paying for it. And it doesn't hurt so bad. So when you plan ahead, you're just more prepared to actually spend the money, and you're more prepared for things that you're testing, because it's really hard to sell a product where I'm like, hey, let's just put it out there. We'll see if it works or not. But that is a little bit of what it is, whether it's social media or a Google ad or even a newsletter. Like, let's see if people click on these things. Let's see if they open them. Are they interested? Like, a little bit of it is testing. So there needs to be enough margin there to, for one, figure out what those your best options are, which is most likely done with a professional or reading a book, but then really making sure there is always money set aside just for that purpose.
Okay, so let's say I'm a client that wants to spend I'm budgeting $24,000 a year for marketing, and let's just call it $2,000 a month. If we bring in someone like you, do you do it all for us, or do I do part of it and you do part of it? How, because I don't understand what does $2,000 even get you?
And that's a great question, because it can, I hate saying it can depend, but it can. Like, I have some clients where it's completely done for you. I do the newsletter, I do the social media content, I do the posting, and we essentially have one phone call a month that just talks about like what's going on, what do you want to, you know, is there something on sale this month? Whatever. We have that 30-minute call. And then the rest is all on me. But there's others where it is a lot more of, like, I've got a new winery that I'm working with, and they are good at doing their social media. They're good at updating their website. Like, they don't need that done for them, but they need a professional to come in and say, like, this is actually the strategy. This is what to post. This is when to post. These are the types of campaigns to run. This is when you're going to email. No, this is, you know, you need to be able to give them something to click on in the email so we can measure things. Like, they need an expert to come in and refine all of it, but they can do it themselves. So I do have people who I work with on, like, I'm doing everything, but then there's others that it's more just helping them with their strategy on almost a coaching basis, to make sure they're on the right track.
Okay, so you can come in at that stage, and then let's say the winery begins to become a, you know, Gallo Wine, right? They're a, you know, let's call it a $1 billion company. At what point does it kind of all go in-house and they get somebody? Do you progress with them through the growth of their business? And at what level do you, or what, is there a time when you hand it off, or how does that work?
I've had one client that fired me, and it was the best thing ever because he could afford an in-house marketing person. And that was the coolest thing to see, that like, he had grown enough that that was something that he could now do. And I couldn't have been happier for him. And so usually that's the next progression is hiring somebody in house to do that.
Typically is that somebody you're at that point, you're doing $1 million to $5 million in sales, maybe 5 million.
Yeah. I mean, again, it might depend on what your industry is.
Okay.
But yeah, probably.
Okay.
And I think that so that's usually that progression. But when I get folks who their business is just a little bigger than what I deal with, like they need a national sales plan or they want to sell all this merchandise through their website and they need to be having all these, I do have other people in the industry that I tap and I say, hey, this one's probably not for me. It'd be better suited for you. And I will already, boost them up to the big guys. But, if that's where they're headed.
Okay. Gotcha. Okay. So what did I not ask you? What else is there anything else in the book that is important? Like I'm envisioning common mistakes that people make. And I want to make sure that we kind of help some of those people maybe avoid them or make them less often.
Yeah. So I think without sounding really self-indulgent, what I love about this book is that the first half of both of them is really an evaluation about your business or organization. So before we even start talking about social media and emails, it talks about what we just talked about in the beginning, asking you all of those questions, kind of helping you set your goals, define who you are, what is your mission? And then it goes through things like branding and your customer avatar and setting a budget and getting all of those foundational things in place, because it's not fair to your business or to your customers to just go off and say, I'm just going to post on social media every day without a plan. It wastes your time. And if you're paying someone, it wastes your money. Or if you're like, I'm going to go and, just put these ads on TV or whatever that thing might be. I'm going to send mailers out. If there's no way to track them, if you're not paying attention to who you're sending them to, it's a wasted effort. So if you really understand who your customer is, if you really have branding dialed in, like with branding, they say it can be, let's say 6 to 8 impressions before somebody decides to do business with you. So you'll see that on my website, everything has got a shade of blue and pink. And oftentimes I even wear blue or pink. That my books have shades of blue. There's a branding theme, there's fonts, there's, my logo that goes along so that you keep hearing the Gen Advantage and you see that logo and then you remember when you need marketing, the Gen Advantage. And while that concept sounds fairly easy, some people get really carried away on Canva and they're like, all these templates look fantastic. Today will be black and white, tomorrow will be teal and orange. And they don't, every time a customer sees their stuff, they're making a new first impression instead of building upon every impression they make. So I use an example in my book where I saw a sign for a handyman on the side of the street and it's a cute little logo, very recognizable. I'm like, oh, that's nice. And then I saw a truck driving through the neighborhood with the same sign. And I'm like, whoa, he's big enough to have a truck. Good for him. Then I heard an ad on the radio and I was like, okay, this person's legit. I keep seeing, getting these impressions and the same messaging over and over. So when it comes time for me to need a handyman, I know exactly who I'm going to go look up.
Is it Mr. Handyman by any chance?
No, I
saw a truck the other day, Mr. Handyman.
Is that the one with
name. The
cute, there's a cute little guy?
It might be.
I can't remember because that was three years ago.
I just saw Mr. Handyman, a neighborly company or something like
it
that.
It might have been.
That's a great, great logo.
And, yeah.
But anyway, so you get the brand piece. This is kind of interesting because you get the brand piece, which is important and it seems kind of foundational. But then you have, let's call it advertising, where you're out and running these campaigns. And so the testing piece is important. Measuring what's working is super important because the direct mailer might not have worked as well as the Facebook ad. How do you help people to measure that, or what kind of suggestions do you have in terms of measuring that so that we can think about the cost of acquiring a customer is, a pretty big piece. I spent $1,000 and I got one customer. Okay. Well, that tells me it's $1,000 to acquire a customer. I hope I have a lifetime value for my customer of more than $1,000.
Right. It's that lifetime thing too, that you're looking at, whether it's sure, they could come buy one cup of coffee, but do they keep coming back? So we can acquire that customer for you, but there's other things you have to have in place, like great customer service and a great product and standing behind all of that. When things go bad, how do you stand behind it and still get them to say good things about you? So it's not just even about, you know, once you acquire that customer, there needs to be a process in place of how you intend on keeping them. And while that doesn't seem like marketing, I definitely am talking with my clients about that all the time, because I just think it's so important. Like, and I've had good clients tell me sometimes you lose on a job. Like, sometimes you just have to go upside down and you have to fix the problem and you end up with a happy customer, and that's all that matters at the end of the day.
We're invested into a company called Edge, and it actually encourages, let's call it, frontline workers to get good posts on social media about their customer service, and they get rewards and that kind of thing. But it's basically creating a culture of be so good that people want to talk about how great you are online, and everybody makes a little bit extra money by doing a good job. So I know how important that is. It's that company's killing it. So it's working, and people understand that to a large extent. Okay, so just closing thoughts for our audience about marketing or winning or building their own advantage.
Honestly, more just for the community, is having an appreciation for these leaders who are out there building our community for us. So these small business owners, I mean, I shop on Amazon just like everybody else does, but when I can go to a small restaurant, when I can go keep my money local, I do. Because I know how important that is. Just if we want to live in an awesome community, we have to support it. And same for nonprofits. I mean, it is so easy to get involved, whether it is time, talent, or treasure. Call one of them up. If something's on your heart, whether it's, you know, helping victims of sex trafficking or helping rescue puppies, whatever your thing is, they need you and they want you. And there's always a need in this community. Like, we've got some incredible nonprofits around here and just some really high quality leaders. And they would love more attention when it came to just the community. So instead of driving by all of these places, supporting them is just Anytime I can help get that message out, I do.
I love that message. We sometimes around here say, put your money where your town is. And I really believe in that. Obviously, you do as well. And a number of us do. But being more, I guess, intentional about that, if I can go to the local Ace Hardware store, that's probably a good decision.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Well, Jen, thank you for coming on the show. Thanks for doing everything that you're doing for the community and, of course, for the Growth Factory and our group of companies.
Yeah, so thank you. This was fun.
Thank you. And to all you out there fighting the good fight for entrepreneurship and for the backyard advantage, and, of course, all of you out there fighting the good fight for our freedom, our security, and our way of life. Here at the Haney Biz, the Mark Haney Show, and the Growth Factory, we're never above you. We're never below you. Always by your side.
This segment includes the personal knowledge, experiences, and opinions about angel investing by seasoned angel investors. This content is for informational purposes only and should not be considered as legal, tax, investment, or financial advice. Nothing in this segment constitutes a solicitation, recommendation, or endorsement.